Good afternoon. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon here on KQ1KRNN on Thursday, the 5th of January, the 2016. Jeff Brown will be your host for today. Today we'll be talking with Vicki Williams and Jim Howell about the highlights of the UAS School of Management. We'll find out what's new at the Juno Douglas City Museum. Pat Harris will be to highlight the upcoming Garden Club Seeds Exchange. And Nancy DeCherney will be here during our top. Pat Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More today on a Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 20 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with highs near 25. Forecast for Friday night, mostly cloudy skies with lows around 14 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Chairman Mark Fox of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation in North Dakota is optimistic about working with the new state government. Leaders of North Dakota's five tribes are meeting with Governor Doug Burgum this week.
The way this legislative session is beginning with the new governor is the most I've seen in many years to work with the tribe, so to speak. I'm impressed by the agenda. I'm impressed by the overtures to reach out to Indian country and say, let's sit down and talk and communicate.
Scott Davis is the executive director of the state's Indian Affairs Commission and is helping advise the governor.
First thing on his agenda that coincides with our state legislative session here is to sit down with each tribe one by one to go over all the issues that are important, things that are needed to be changed, whether it's policy, funding. He really wants to get acquainted with the history, obviously our culture, et cetera. But even the differences in governance on how each tribe governs themselves, it's been a very good start.
In the governor's state address this week, Burgum says his goal is to move forward with tribes. Burgum also discussed the Dakota Access Pipeline, calling on people at the main camp near Standing Rock to vacate due to spring flooding. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe has also asked people to leave, citing safety concerns. Chairman Fox says the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation government has from the beginning supported the decisions of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe.
Even though our perspectives on pipelines and making sure our allottees and landowners and beneficiaries can enjoy development of oil and gas, which we have on Fort Berthold, our perspective might be a little bit different than some people in Indian country, but at the same time, that fellow tribal nation does not want that pipeline across, then we support them. So I would hope that the protesters, those who are not from Standing Rock, those who are not enrolled there, those who are not from there, would respect and understand that.
Davis says communication is ongoing with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and plans include helping people exit the camp in the coming months. Navajo lawmakers voted Wednesday to remove the tribe's financial controller, Jim Paris. A press release from the speaker's office stated the details are personnel, but a number of council members raised concerns that the position reportedly is paid a six-figure salary for 3 days of work. The controller is appointed by the Navajo Nation president. The office of President Russell B. Gay issued a statement before Wednesday's meeting urging lawmakers to vote against the removal, saying it threatens the tribe's financial stability. Begay's office says the search to fill the position will take time and be financially disruptive to the tribal government. The removal is effective immediately. A former Justice Department official who supervised the case of Leonard Peltier wants him released, saying enough time has been served and has asked President Obama to grant the activist clemency. Lee Strubinger spoke with the former U.S. attorney and has more.
Leonard Peltier was a member of the American Indian Movement. He is serving two life sentences on a conviction for murdering two FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation. He's been in prison for over 40 years. That's plenty of time, says James Reynolds. He's a former United States attorney who served in Iowa in the late 70s when Leonard Peltier was tried in Iowa. Reynolds directed the U.S. attorney who prosecuted Peltier during the appeals process.
There's an awful lot of activity going on. The response letter that I got from them in acknowledging my service at the Justice Department from the pardon attorney was that his clemency is my letter is part of the file and that the file is under consideration by the president.
Human rights organizations like Amnesty International have called Peltier a political prisoner and request his release. Others, like former FBI agent Ed Woods, says Peltier is a cold-blooded convicted murderer who should finish out the remainder of his two life sentences. I'm Lee Strupinger in South Dakota.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past here, and you're tuned into June Afternoon. In the studio with me now are Becky Williams, Dean of the School of Management and Associate Professor of Accounting at the University of Alaska Southeast, and Dr. Jim Powell, Assistant Professor of Public Administration. Becky and Jim, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, this is great. Thanks. Good to see you again.
Becky, if you could tell me what the School of Management is.
Okay, so School of Management at UAS, we have all the business programs that we offer here at our Juneau campus and distance statewide to anyone in the state of Alaska. We also have our popular MPA, Master of Public Administration, which Jim is one of our faculty members. And we offer accounting classes, introduction to business, QuickBooks classes. So some people may be interested in taking classes, even if they're not interested in coming for a full college degree. So we have a lot of students that might look at our list of classes and say, oh, that might be an interesting one for me, and I could pick up some good tips for work.
That's one of my questions. What kind of classes do people take for a degree in management?
Okay, so for a degree in management, we actually have a four-year degree in management, human resource management, and accounting is actually our largest degree out at UAS. So they're going to take classes like principles of management, introduction to business, principles of financial accounting. We have a record keeping for small business. We have a project management class. So a lot of different classes. Excel is one of our popular classes because many people in the workplace use Excel. So,
is it a four-year degree?
We have a four-year degree, the Bachelor of Business Administration, with emphasis in accounting or management, or human resource management, or our new one we just added in the last 2 years, management information systems, which is very popular. We also have a two-year associate degree in business, and we have certificates, which are small if you want to say maybe a one-year degree in a very specific topic.
And Jim, what are you in charge of?
I teach in the public administration side of the School of Management, and which means really we teach some basic classes in like organizational behavior, human resources, and then public administration itself. Today, though, if I could mention, we have a couple classes that we're offering this semester that we call special topics, sure, things that are very timely. And the first is social entrepreneurship, and which is really cool. That's about nonprofits. How do they operate? And really what we teach there is how do you manage those and how do you lead those? It's very timely because in the state of Alaska, we have over 6,000 nonprofit organizations. That's a lot. But what's timely about it right now is, as everybody knows, the state is basically defunded most contributions to nonprofits. They basically zeroed out with their capital budget. So it's really important that nonprofits become more efficient and they're run with, you know, business approaches with the social, you know, missions. So that's what we teach. How do you lead? How do you manage NGOs? So that's a special topic called social entrepreneurship. The other class that we're teaching as a special topics is local government. And we've taught that a couple times. And actually, we're moving, we hope, towards a concentration in local government. Believe it or not, there's not a lot of those courses offered in Alaska in either of these two. So that's why they're attractive. People see that and they want to take the classes. So the one in local government is our general local government class. You know, how do you manage, how do you lead, how do you run local government, which is a big thing in Alaska. And in the state constitution, there's basically two levels. They specifically said, we're not going to get a lot of levels of government. We're going to have local government, which is city or borough in the state. There are some other distinctions, but and then there's state government. So the local government, which I used to be in on the assembly here for 9 years, we do a lot. We're isolated, so we have to take on a lot of responsibilities. So how do you do that? I mean, Juneau really operates like a city in the lower 48, maybe 150,000. We have our own airport. We have our own ski area. We have our own harbors. I mean, we really do a lot of stuff, which is really good government because it's local and people know each other and there's a lot of accountability. So how do you do that? How do you become very efficient? So those are the two topics that special course we're having this semester.
So you have a lot of nonprofits. What kind of businesses are these nonprofits involved in?
Oh, my God.
Generally speaking.
Yeah. There's a lot of social missions that are involved. I mean, a lot of people are on nonprofit boards that are doing good things from, the Aware Center to I'm on the Arctic Winter Games board. It's a statewide board. And actually, we just got totally defunded the last couple of years. So how do we raise that money? How do we become more efficient? That's the thing. So there's statewide boards. There's local boards that do good things from the Glory Hole here to all kinds. I mean, it just... There's too numerous. I mean, there's 6,000 of them filling in the blanks of what government doesn't provide, you might say, or where there's a market failure, where the business doesn't provide it, where the government institutions provide it. That's where NGOs come in.
And you're in one of them now, the nonprofit radio station. It's on the...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that first. Good point.
There's a little bit of confusion as far as what's happening currently with the School of Management.
Yes. There's been a lot in the news about the whole University of Alaska that we're going through this major process called Strategic Pathways, where we're looking at how we do business and how we should be structured, and should there be a lead campus for certain programs. With the School of Management, what people are hearing is that the School of Management at UAS is going away. And what I want to say is it's only an organizational change. So the School of Management programs, every program that we have at the School of Management, all the classes that we have been offering for many years will continue to stay in Juneau. We will continue through UAS to offer all the business, Masters of Public Administration. The only thing is we will become a department instead of a school within the organization. So within UAS, we will be the Department of Business and Public Administration. We will be under the Dean of Arts and Sciences. So all our faculty stay. We don't lose any faculty. All our staff stay. Really, the only thing that changes is our overall name, and we will no longer have a dean for the School of Management. So that's the only thing that changes.
Doesn't sound like it's that confusing.
So we wanted to come on to your program and say we are still here at UAS. We are still offering business and public administration programs. We've got lots of classes. Classes start January 17th.
It's not too late to sign up.
That's right. It's not too late to sign up.
What kind of careers do people get involved in after they have their degree?
Oh, it could be. We have our students in pretty much any organization you can think of. We've got a lot of the accounting people at the state of Alaska have taken accounting classes with us. We have accountants who work for public accounting firms, work in the accounting offices of different organizations. Some of our human resource management majors are working in different personnel positions at organizations, and these organizations could be for-profit businesses or non-profit businesses. So our graduates are in many organizations and businesses throughout the whole state. I walk into the state office building. I don't work there, but when I do walk in there, I always run into one of our graduates of one of our programs. I was telling Jim just before we came down, I was at a small, my husband's department Christmas party, and there were three students who either graduated from our MPA program there or they're currently in our program. So we have people in a lot of different areas.
So when the student comes up to the counselor and says, I'm not sure what I want to do. The counselor says, what do you like to do? What are your interests? And what kind of person goes for a degree in management?
Well, actually, at UAS, we're a little unique. A lot of our students are what we call non-traditional. They're students who have maybe gone out and worked, and they can see what you can do with a degree and without a degree. And they come back to us and say, you know what, I think I'm interested in accounting, or I think I'm interested in human resource management, and they're probably still working full-time and taking our classes part-time. Our classes are distance, so they can do work in the evening or on weekends. And so a lot of students are taking classes so that they can look for promotions and in the ability to take on additional responsibilities where they currently work.
The distance programs work really well for Alaskans because we're all over the place. And they're at night. And usually what they're called non-traditional students, like older students, you might say, are becoming more traditional in the sense that that's what our student body really is made up of. And I have students that the MPA program, the Master's Degree in Public Administration, we pride ourselves on quality. We have a limit of 15 students in each of the classes, and it's real time. So we're engaged with the students in a distance way. I mean, I have one student that was in Iraq. I had one student that was in China. They're Alaska residents, but they're traveling. They're doing their jobs in other places. So that really helps. And our program has grown quite a bit over the last – I mean, I've taught in the program part-time or as an adjunct for almost 17 years now. Now I'm full-time, and many of those years were just adjunct before I got my PhD. But you notice that, and that's the richness of the class too, because we got these people that are they're journeymen. I mean, they've been in that job for a long time, so they bring that experience to the class. And that's as wealthy as far as learning and just the process of learning as it is for one person to teach a class. We learn from each other's too. So it's a really neat experience.
I'm talking with Vicki Williams and Jim Powell about the University of Alaska Management School. If people are so inspired and want to go to School of Management, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay, there's two ways. You can call our phone number, 907-796-6402, and we'll gladly talk to you about any of our programs and our spring classes. Or you can go to our website for additional information at www.uas.alaska, and Alaska is spelled out, .edu/SOM.
Is there a phone number they can call?
Yes, 796-6402.
All right. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
The only thing is, Jim had mentioned that our MPA program is live in the evening distance. All of our undergraduate classes are offered over the internet, and so you don't have to be in a certain place at a certain time. You can work on the class whatever time fits your schedule. There are deadlines, obviously, that you have to meet, you know, you have to do work, but you can do the class at 2 a.m. in the morning if you want your work. So it's very flexible for people who are working full-time.
Vicki and Jim, thanks a lot for coming down.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 5th of January, 2017. It was on this day, 1643, the first legal divorce recorded in the American colonies was finalized. Anne Clark of the Massachusetts Bay Colony had petitioned for divorce from her estranged and adulterous husband, Dennis Clark, who admitted to abandoning his wife and two children for another woman, and so the divorce was granted. It's the birthday of the poet W.D. Snodgrass, William DeWitt Snodgrass, Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, 1926, who in the early 50s began to write poems about his marriage, which was falling apart. His book, Heart's Needle, came out in 1959. His first book won the Pulitzer Prize, and he was considered one of the founders of confessional poetry, though he did not like the term, poets writing openly about their personal lives. It's the birthday of the Kenyan author Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, born in Limuru, Kenya, in 1938, wrote the first East African novel written in English. It was Weep Not, Child, based on his family's troubles during the Mau Mau uprising. He was sent to prison for writing a political play, I Will Marry When I Want. 5 years later, he was about to return home when he found out that the Moi dictatorship in Kenya was plotting to kill him, and so he went into exile, eventually settled in the United States. Has written a couple of memoirs since, Dreams in the Time of War, about growing up outside of Nairobi, and Birth of a Dream Weaver, A Writer's Awakening, about his university days in Uganda. It's the birthday of Stella Gibbons, born 1902, in London, author of many novels, short stories, best known for her novel Cold Comfort Farm, a satire of romance novels. And it's the birthday of the Italian novelist Umberto Eco, born 1932, Alessandria, Italy, a scholar who wrote a murder mystery set in a 14th century monastery that became a big bestseller in 1980, The Name of the Rose. Even though it was filled with biblical references and discussions of Christian theology and heresies, and it was set in the 14th century. Umberto Eco's other books included The Prague Cemetery and his novel Foucault's Pendulum, which took him 8 years to write, came out in 1988. Here's a poem for today by W.D. Snodgrass, Looking. What was I looking for today? All that poking under the rugs, peering under the lamps and chairs, going from room to room that way, forever up and down the stairs like someone stupid with sleep or drugs. Everywhere I was wrong. I started turning the drawers out, then I was staring in at the icebox door, wondering if I'd been there long, wondering what was I looking for. Later on, I think I went back again. Where did the rest of the time go? Was I down cellar? I can't recall finding the light switch or the last place I've had it or how I'd know I didn't look at it and go past or whether it's what I want at all. Looking, a poem by W.D. Snodgrass from his Selected Poems, 1957 to 1987, published by Soho Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 24 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio, here representing the City Museum, Kai Hendrickson, Joe Slam, Paul Corvez, and Illyria Jensen. Thank you, everybody, for coming to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
So, Kai, if you could explain what's going on in general.
All right. Well, the City Museum is having our first Friday tomorrow from 4:30 to 7 p.m., and we're actually going to be doing an opening reception for three new exhibits. One is Itchy Shanak, and I apologize for my Tlingit pronunciation, but that is the Tlingit name for Perseverance Valley, And this exhibit is looking at Mount Juno through art and recreation. So we have 13 paintings and photographs featuring Mount Juno from our permanent collection, along with some pieces of hiking gear. We'll also be opening A Braided Way, Poetry, Parenting, and Place. And those are broadside poems from Elyria Jensen and Jonas Lamb. And then Paul Corbez has an exhibit entitled North Douglas Highway Mailboxes. They're photographs of mailboxes along North Douglas Highway. And he will also be doing a free public presentation about his photography on Thursday, January 12th from 7 to 8 p.m.
Why so many exhibits?
Well, I think it just kind of worked out that way. We have rotating solo artist exhibits through the winter in the Murray Gallery, which is the main gallery when you enter the museum. And then we had had the Disasters at Home exhibit up in the video room and the map case gallery for at least a year at this point. And so that was ready to come down. And so we put the Perseverance Valley Mount Juno exhibit will be up through the end of this year. But then we will have Elyria and Jonas's exhibit up for 2 months, I believe, and then an exhibit of John Hyde's photographs up for several months in that video room space.
Jonas and Elyria, you're putting together broadsides. Could you describe for the audience what a broadside is?
You can take that first crack.
Oh, I'll take the first crack. It's really, to me, it's a public experience with poetry versus just reading poetry at home or reading poetry at the library. You know, it's just sort of an effort to make poetry more public and more visual. So what we've done is combine our children's art with our writing, and it's been a fun process. And I was actually reading historically, and Jonas probably knows a bit more about this as well. The broadside was really a key form of, you know, political and military outreach anytime a proclamation was made. So, you know, the whole concept of a broadside reaches really far back in history. And then I think somewhere, you know, over time, it also morphed to be a form of poetry.
What came first, the poem or the broadside? Go ahead.
Right. There's a key question, right? The riddle for the ages.
Do you mean in the pieces we're exhibiting or in general?
In the piece you're exhibiting.
A little bit of both. I think we set our standards high. We said to our children, now make a Christmas tree. Now do a portrait of your dad drinking in the laundry room. And these things didn't happen. We found we had to, squint our eyes to imagine these scenes in our children's artwork. So it was a collaborative process for sure. It was messy. It didn't turn out exactly as we'd planned, but I think that's the beauty of it. In most cases, I'd say it's safe to say the poem existed before the visual in these cases, with some exceptions.
And in some cases, just separately, where, my kids are very prolific producers of art, I guess, or, you know, there's always markers scattered over the table. And so it was fun to actually finally sift through that and try and, you know, find some matches to, you know, the words that I'd written and their art. So for me, some of the poems come from, you know, reaching back to when they were babies. So over, I guess, 8 years or so. And Jonas and I, our families have been friends during that time, and we've parented together during that time. And here we found ourselves both writing a lot of poems about being parents, and figured it was time to...
Parenting is poetry.
I should tell my daughter that. How many broadsides do you have?
I think we each have about 10 to 12 that we've created for the small back room at the City Museum.
What kind of materials did you use? What media did you use?
Well, there's a variety. Some of mine, thinking about the kids' art that I used, some of it was their paintings, some of it was the drawings. One is a collage that my daughter did.
Wood glue.
Yep.
There were some peas involved, peas as a form of applying paint. We got messy.
Jonas took it a whole nother level.
Peace and love.
Food as art. When you have kids, food has to become art, right?
And Paul Corbez, you decided to take on mailboxes as a subject.
Well, in 2011, I came to see my daughter who lives on Douglas with her family. And a house sat for a while, one of the houses on North Douglas. And as I was driving by, I could admire all the mailboxes there. It was during the summer. And the snowplows hadn't gone through yet and reduced them to ashes. And so I thought, this is photographer's paradise, you know. And so I spent a whole morning just taking pictures of the different mailboxes. And when I heard that the Juno Museum, the Juno Douglas Museum, was opening some shows, I just applied. And I was lucky enough to be chosen as the first solo show of this year.
Are you a photographer by profession?
I was. I had two professions in my life. I was a photographer, professional photographer, and then I started teaching photography at the university, and then I ended up being a university professor.
What about mailboxes appeals to you? Or in particular, the mailboxes that you took pictures of?
Oh, here the mailboxes are real artifacts and pieces of art as well, not just mailboxes. And I think I call my exhibit portraits of mailboxes. And in fact, they are portraits of mailboxes, but also portraits of the families that live there, all the residents, because you can see what they're interested in, you know, skiing or snowboarding or sailing, whatever. Or you know that in some houses there are kids, because you see some signs with kid stuff on it. You know that some are musicians. You see some musical notes and some all kinds of things, you know. So it's really what I call the in absentia portrait of the people of North Douglas.
Did you take pictures of some of the other art? Was there like the records or the skis?
No. I'm not a skier myself because I have a metal hip, and that doesn't help. And but, you know, I'm not against postcards of Alaska, you know, beautiful sunsets. I took some in Ock Bay the other day, you know, and it was just, like, fantastic. You know, we don't have that in France, you know, where I come from. And but what I was looking for was something special, you know, that Juno photographers probably wouldn't do because it's too close to them. You know, as we say, familiarity breeds either contempt or at least indifference. And it's true that from the reactions I've had, people say, "My God, you took pictures of mailboxes in Juno?" And I said, "Yeah, of course. Why not?"
Did you end up talking to the people whose mailboxes you took pictures of?
Not really, because I just saw one person who was jogging, and he stopped and said, "What you doing there?" You know, and his dog asked me the same question. And I said, well, taking pictures of mailboxes, because in France we don't have those mailboxes. We have like just holes in doors. You know, we don't have real mailboxes. So it's boring in France. And here I thought, this is magnificent, you know. And I hope that after the snowplow goes through now, that they'll put their mailboxes back to order in a way, or that they're going to multiply, you know, from this show. That's my ambition.
How many mailboxes did you take pictures of?
128, I think.
That's amazing.
And I've kept 25 for the show.
Paul Corbez, Larry Jensen, and Jonas Lamb, thank you very much for coming down, Kaya. You want to give us more about the details about when the shows are opening?
Sure. So just to remind people, the City Museum is located at 4th and Main Streets, and the show will be 4:30 to 7 p.m. tomorrow and is free. And actually, we have free admission all winter to the museum this month. It's through the generous support of Don and Alma Harris.
Anything anybody would like to add? Just go see the photos. Great.
Right. Don't steal them off the walls, but that's what a broadside should. It's kind of ironic that we put them in a museum.
Right.
They should be on a telephone pole or a mailbox. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
All right. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
about 35 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio here on Juno Afternoon are Pat Harris and Alfreda Nord, here to talk about the Juno Garden Club and the Seed Exchange. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be here. I guess first we can mention what's happening this Saturday. It's kind of a kickoff for the gardening season. You know, the days are getting longer, a little more sunlight some days, and so we're getting garden fever, and that means looking at seed catalogs and thinking about what we need to order and what we may have on hand. And so that's kind of the purpose of the meeting. On Saturday, we are meeting at 3 p.m. in the Valley Library, and meeting for members and hopefully some new members too. And we may get around to not only exchanging seeds, but also coordinating on seed orders so that we can save on shipping because, as we all know, one packet of seeds with $20 of shipping is not economical. So that's where we started with that program, and that's kind of where we are. And Alfreda is our longtime historian of the club, so she's got a lot more general information about the garden club in general, and I'm kind of a newbie, so I'm going to throw it over to Alfreda.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Alfreda.
I'm working on our history project, and because this is our 90th year in 2017 that the garden club, and as near as I can tell, it has been continuous. I'm still working on a 10-year period from 32 to 42, but I have reason to believe that it was a continuous 90 years.
And studying gardens for so long at the club, what has been some of the most popular things that people grow here? Where do people grow mostly?
What I'm doing is looking at the history from all the projects, and one of the things that it wasn't a matter of growing so much, it was a matter of beautifying Juno and keeping the city council and others moving on things like getting a dog catcher and getting the weeds along the streets taken care of, and eventually a city gardener and all those kinds of things. And so it's a very interesting project.
What does a dog catcher have to do with the Juno Garden Club?
It has to do with dogs doing their stuff in gardens.
Yeah.
And the garden club was upset with that.
Yeah, some of the, you might want to talk about some of their our current projects or projects that are ongoing that have been, which I think are pretty interesting too, that kind of benefit the whole city, not just gardeners. Might want to talk
right.
about
well,
some of the other
some
projects.
Well, some of the things that come to mind is we have taken on more of a role in keeping the Pioneer Home grounds weeded and nice and planting things. We are working more with the Wickersham House to help the gardener there. And the other project that is very interesting is working with the Juno Youth
Johnson Youth Center.
Correct. Johnson Youth Center. Mm-hmm. And we had an active role there for probably 10 years or more.
About how many people are in the club now?
About 40. 40, somewhere between 40 and 50.
And what are people growing?
Growing? I don't know. I'm a vegetable person, so I do a lot of vegetables, and I think a lot of the members are flower people. So it's kind of a mixture of folks that just like to work in the dirt, basically. you can tell by my fingernails that. Yeah, and if you're – I think people are always interested in trying new things, too. And so that's one function that I see maybe our – event on Saturday is
encouraging people to try new things by sharing seeds or sharing experiences with growing things. So I love to try new things every year, and, you know, sometimes they're successful.
As long as they're vegetables.
Well, no, I'm branching out into flowers. Some of them are edible, actually.
That's good to hear that you're branching out.
And one of the things that we do is the plant sale every spring. And there we utilize getting the old-timers or the people who have established gardens divide their plants and share them so that newbies coming to Juneau starting a garden, can get plants that are already tested in the Juneau climate. And so I'm more interested in that aspect of it than raising vegetables. I can't raise too many vegetables out there by the glacier.
If you have a few words of advice for potential gardeners or beginners, what would that be?
Don't be scared.
Just get in and do it.
talk to people. Come to garden association meetings and get inspired. Look at seed catalogs this time of the year are my salvation in the long winter days. I just love looking at seed catalogs and getting inspired. So that always helps me.
Any favorites?
Catalogs? You know, there aren't as many hard paper catalogs as there used to be, which actually I think is a good idea, but there are a lot of online resources. One of the most popular ones here in Juneau is Territorial Seeds out of Oregon. They have a lot of things that are very good for our climate. The local stores are getting a lot better about carrying things that do well here, but I know a few years ago there were things that would never have a hope of succeeding here, and it would break my heart when new gardeners would try some of those things and then have failures. They were expecting to be able to grow watermelons in the valley, and you know, just doesn't work.
I've been talking with Elfrieda Nord and Pat Harris about the June Garden Club kickoff, Saturday, January 7th at 3 p.m. in the Valley Library. Thanks so much for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just happy spring, everybody, and think green.
'Twas just a garden in the rain, close to the little leafy lane. A touch of color neath skies of gray. The raindrops kiss the flower beds, the blossoms raise their thirsty heads, a perfume, thank you, they seem to say.
And the Hot Licks. Time is 45 minutes past the hour into our Tune 2 Junior Afternoon here on Listener Supported KTUO and Karen Inn. In the studio with me now, Chef Steph. Thank you for coming in, Chef Steph.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for having me.
So you're here representing the Juneau Artist Gallery.
Yes, yes. This is a shout out for an artist search for the Juneau Artist Gallery for new members. On Friday, it's First Friday, and a lot of our members will be around. So if you have any questions or are interested and you're not sure, come on down, meet us. Take a look at the space and meet who we are and what we do and what's involved. And it's a good you know, if you're not sure, just come and ask questions. And we have applications, and we'll explain everything.
And you're located in the Senate building?
Yes, behind the Bear's Lair.
But how many artists do you have?
Oh, we average about 20 artists. And right now, we have some spots open. And if anybody's interested, you know, if you do something with fiber or different mediums, crafts, bring them by. If you're not, just, once again, if you're not sure, come and talk to us. It's a good group of people.
And how many? Ask you again, how many do you have in there?
About 20.
Okay.
Yes, it averages about 20.
What kind of things do the people do who are volunteering?
Right now, we have photographers and jewelers, painters, pottery,
and
beadwork.
And they always have to do a shift.
Yes. So to become a member, you have to pay in, and then you pay monthly rent depending on the size of your space, and you have to work a number of hours dependent on the space that you have. But it's always fun. I love working at the gallery. First of all, I get to hang out with all these beautiful pieces of artwork that I want in my house and have no room for. So I'm surrounded by beautiful work, and it's a great group of people. I've been a member now for about 2.5 years, and I love them. They're really such wonderful people, so, and very talented.
And this is for Friday, so you could, if you go to the gallery, you can see all the artists themselves.
Yes, yes. The artists like to hang out and visit and talk about their work.
And next month, you're the featured artist.
Yes.
Which you'll be featuring?
The focus will be on conversation heart cookies. So for Valentine's Day, all those candies with the conversation hearts, they will be cookies.
Do you have a website?
I do.
Both.
So I am chefsteffs.com, and the gallery is junoartistgallery.com. And that website also will give you information about being a member if you want to do a little research beforehand or just to see who's there, and then come on down. Really, the best thing to do is come on down. The space is always changing. People are moving spots. And so if, oh, I was just there a month ago, I guarantee it looks different. It changes from when I go in.
All right, Chef, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year.
This is Bird Note. The savanna country of northern Australia is one of the most fire-prone natural habitats in the world, and the vegetation is well adapted to the recurrent fires. As a fire sweeps across the savanna, birds of prey such as black kites stand or hover near the fire's margin, awaiting prey like grasshoppers and lizards, fleeing the flames. But there's now growing evidence that black kites aren't only opportunists. They may actually help create some of these fires by carrying burning twigs in their talons, dropping them on a patch of savanna away from the original wildfire, and picking off the escaping prey. Setting a new area ablaze allows that individual kite to feed in a space where there aren't so many rival predators. During the 2016 fire season in Australia, two scientists collected data to document this phenomenon. Accounts from firefighters, park rangers, and other stewards of the land echo the knowledge of Indigenous people of northern Australia who have long known about birds propagating fires. This has led some to speculate that early humans might even have learned how to use fire based on watching these birds carry burning embers. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
The Masters of Public Administration at the University of Alaska Southeast comes to you where you live and work in Alaska. Online classes combine the structure of the classroom with the accessibility of an e-learning program. Get an interactive, supportive, and high-quality education. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast School of Management.
It's about 9 minutes before the hour. You are tuned to Junior Afternoon here. Listener supported KTOR and KRNN. Nancy Vetrini's in the studio now. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, thanks for having me. Beautiful day out. So we have a few things going on. It is the first Friday week, of course. Tonight at 5:30 to 6:30 at the Downtown Public Library, it's family night, so you can go join them for a little light supper, crafts, and programs. They have a schedule on their website if you want to get more information about that. As I mentioned, it's first Friday, so we'll just run quickly through the things. There's not very many grand openings, but at the Arts Council, we have 27 different artists. So it's like you're hitting 27 openings at one time. And let me just say, it's a juried show. It was juried by Yvonne Zerbitz from Ketchikan. It is stunning. They just finished hanging it up, and it's an amazing collection. People, and the artwork is stupendous. So do come by the Arts Council on first Friday. Opens at 4:30 and goes till 7. You're going to see stuff by Diane Anderson, George Buchheit, Rick Clare, Katie Craney, Laurie Daniels, Amanda Filori, Dan Fruits, Terry Gallant, Cal Giordano, Jim Heumann, Adelaide Johnson, Timmy Johnson, Patty Jupe, Rachel Usler, Jane Lindsay, Pua Maunu, Ray Peck, McGill Pratt, David Riccio, Terry Robus, Takenya Rosetta, Rob Royce, Barbara Shepherd, Jerry Smetzer, Laurie Stenberg, Cameron Vance, and Natalie Watson.
Too bad you didn't have more artists.
Yeah, we scraped, you know, it was, but anyway, Ray Peck's got two totems down there. It's just amazing. Anyway.
And how are these connected? How are these all connected?
They were juried by, we put out a call, and they were juried by, as I said, Yvonne. And she selected the ones that are in there. And when you come, she will have announced who the winners are tomorrow by the time we open. So, Alaska Robotics has Finding My Voice by Christine Carpenter. I think her show is going to be up for a while. It's hanging through January. This is called Finding My Voice, and is a sort of a journal type thing about some very painful experiences that this young woman went through. Annie Kales is having a studio and attic sale, sort of from anywhere from 10% to 100% off. Wow. So you better start there. So original art from Constance Baltok and Barbara Craver and more, plus some great deals. So you can stop in there. The Juno Douglas City Museum has a very fun exhibit. If you've ever driven out North Douglas, you know that there's a lot of wacky mailboxes out there. And somebody did a photo essay on most of the mailboxes on North Douglas. He photographed them all at the same time in the same type of light. So it's just a really interesting and quite funny.
He's really took pictures, about 200 pictures.
It's amazing. So anyway, it's a great exhibit. They're also opening A Braided Way, Poetry and Parenting in Place by Ilaria Jensen and Jonas Lamb. And then there is, and I'm going to butcher this language, Itji Shanach, The Glowing Valley, an exhibit of paintings and photographs and objects relating to Mount Juno in the Map Case Gallery. And you were just talking with Chef Steph. She has, looking for new artists in there. So stop by that. M.K. McNaughton has an exhibit out in the Northern Tea House if you're out the road. And she's doing oils with live models. So she's always trying new things. I love that about MK. So go on out there. If you haven't been to the tea house, it's lovely too. So that gets you.
She's doing a portrait a week.
She did that. She is an amazingly prolific person, very talented and very creative. There is also at the Salon Cedars, Sculptures of Shared Souls, a unique showing of wood and stone sculptures by Patty Jupe. So stop in. That's if you go to the Juno Artist Gallery, that's just upstairs from that. There's Fireside Lecture, Summiting Denali. Iris Neary and her Summit of Denali in May of 2016. She'll speak at 6:30 and at 8 out at the Mendenhall Visitor Center. We have ice safety workshop and demo, also at the Visitor Center on Saturday from 1:30 to 3. There is at 2 o'clock a film showing of Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush at the Alaska State Museum. I believe this is free. You can get more information at 465-2565. You were just talking about the monthly garden club. There's a tot rave at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council from 4 till 7. You can come if you're little. I mean, young. So expect to see all your young people there having a tot rave. Intro to ceramics at the Makerspace from 6:30 to 7:30. Gold Town Music at 7:30. That's over at Resurrection Lutheran Church. Got quite a lineup of people. Riley Woodford, Tom Loker, Pat Henry, Ed Schoenfeld, Mike Trex. It's always a good time over there, too. Let's see. On Sunday, there's the Midwinter Vocal Festival concert out at Thunder Mountain High School. It's at 3 p.m. There is an international folk dance, as usual, on Sunday. On Monday, we have Makers Show and Tell out at the Makerspace, Locals Night at the Hangar. On Tuesday, we have, Inside Passages Forum featuring the Juneau Police Department at Bartlett Regional Hospital, and a Children's Life Skills Group at AWARE at 6 p.m. And on Wednesday, there is a children's creative play at AWARE and Mudrooms at 7 p.m. at Northern Light Church. So it's going to be kind of a nice week, getting ready for the big weeks that are coming ahead.
A lot of things is kind of shy of activities during the holiday.
There is. You know, it's nice to take a little break, but we only get a little one, and then it's going to be pretty wild. But like I said, over at the Arts Council, you can just one stop. And there, I think, there's going to be, there's a ballroom dance next weekend. It's not this weekend as usual. But, at the Arts Council, 27 different artists. Totally amazing show. Come on over.
Thanks for coming by, Nancy.
Thank you.
Andy Klein is going to be your guest host tomorrow on Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 20 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures near 25 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy skies with lows around 14 degrees. Sunny weather predicted for Saturday with a high near 19. There's a high wind warning predicted for tonight. Watch out.